Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Helping you discover the Twin Cities, it is Radio K's Real College Podcast. Online and on the air, my name is Matthew Curtis, and this week we are being resourceful. I'm joined by the show's producers, Aaron Bolton and Max Fuller, as we listen to stories of people using what they have to further flourish or simply get by. Also, we hear the word on the street from volunteer Jackie Renzetti and Radio K's weekly release spotlight with Zach Simon. And it all starts right now on the Real College Podcast. In studio, I have with me the producers of Real College Podcast, Aaron Bolton and Max Fuller, and today we're talking about and telling stories about resourcefulness. Max, what comes to mind for you?
People are kind of like born with like resources at their fingertips now, so it's just up to people to use them. Like, I always think about that. When I was young and we would go on road trips, my family would buy a map at the gas station and like get all the way to Tennessee. And I can't even get it to Target without my GPS, you know? So it's just like you have to just learn how to use your resources properly, I guess. And a lot of people don't because it just, we have the internet, we have phones.
You think it's dying?
I think it's dying. It's just like the inherent ability to be resourceful. Because, I mean, we just have like an abundance of resources. But, I mean, to actually just like to be one of these people that we're talking about, like, be resourceful.
My best friend and my roommate, he got in this weird situation recently where he got a expired tabs ticket, but I think the ticket blew off his windshield and he never knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got another one and he knew about the second one. And so then he couldn't pay it. And so he didn't realize he had two of them. And apparently when they do that and it doesn't get paid for, you know, ever so long, they'll take your license away. But they didn't tell him. I guess, I don't know, this is his story. So we'll, I guess, take it with a grain of salt. But now he's been forced to take the bus, and he works in Burnsville, and we live right over in Como, like in Minneapolis. And it's just been kind of funny watching him slowly transition to like not knowing anything about like Minneapolis public transit or just being resourceful at all, just driving anywhere, wherever, whenever he wanted, into being this resourceful person. And I think it actually kind of changed him a little bit. He's a little bit more kind of thankful for small things,
yeah,
and
definitely.
Stuff.
That's how I feel too, because when I tell people at the U that I live in Eagan and I have to take a bus to the mall, to the light rail, to another light rail to get here, and it takes me an hour and a half, they're shocked, you know. Like, oh, you didn't ride your Segway to class today? No, it's like I had to become resourceful because I had to get my education.
I longboarded all the way here.
All the way here, man.
Man, I remember I was trying to give you a ride, and I was like, "Hey, how far can I take you?" You're like, "No, dude, it's fine. Like, I want to take you home." And you're like, "No, dude, I'm fine."
No, I don't know. Yeah, it's an adventure, but yeah, kind of just like it's like a pride thing almost. Like, yeah, I'm resourceful. You know, I feel good because not a lot of people could really do that these days, or would be willing to step out of their comfort zone to do that.
We now turn our attention to a story from past producer Amy Friedman, who was up close and personal with a group of women making most of what they have, or should I say don't have, as she joins them on a typical night of dumpster diving.
Pope Francis recently accused the majority of the developed world of a pretty serious crime. He said, "When we waste or throw away food, it's as if we're stealing it from the table of the poor, from those who are hungry." At 2 a.m. on a Minneapolis night, these four girls are no saints.
Jesus Christ.
But on the issue of food waste, they see eye to eye with the Pope and are acting out their own solution. To call them dumpster divers doesn't quite seem right. They are noble scavengers, and tonight the team is made up of Marcel Jordan, Sammy Pfeffer, Rhonda Johnson, and Maggie Travis.
Yeah, that's awesome. So here's what they're going to do. They're going to lift this up because one side's locked. So they're going to lift this side of the dumpster up, and I'm going to go through the opening.
That's Sammy.
Yeah.
When they say diving, that's not an expression. She literally had to dive
headfirst.
Three.
Get it. See, that's why you need to be small.
The first mission was dumpster gold.
Peanut butter!
I might have to.
Oh, what is that? McNair's?
Wait.
Ah, this is the good kind. It's creamy, folks.
So with this little mission and a little bit of gas, we got $100 worth of said product from said distributor.
And it's not just $100 worth of food. It's $100 worth of healthy food. Food that most college kids miss out on because they can't afford it.
This is a good way to eat some of the finer foods. Like, I love to eat. I love to cook. And there's no way I could afford getting such, like, a smorgasbord of weird items. And especially, like, organic, local, colorful foods that actually have flavor. You'd be amazed how many of these bougie little markets just toss it all out on ice.
Maggie's been a cook for 8 years.
I'm food safety certified in 3 states, and yet I still dumpster dive.
Incredibly, none of the girls have ever gotten food poisoning. They rely mostly on visual cues to see if the food is good or not, and they triple wash everything they find right away. Well, there's always a risk. Some of the dumpsters were actually really clean. The cleanest dumpster of the night gave us hundreds of fully wrapped protein bars, some not even expired yet. But Marcel wasn't afraid of the ones that were expired. She says there's more to an expiration date than what the consumer realizes.
This was created by lawyers to cover the businesses. This is like a lowest common denominator of, well, we want to make sure that there's a 99.9% chance that nobody ever gets anything. But, I mean, there's risk with eating. Sometimes your stomach gets upset. I think it's worth the risk to not throw away our food supply.
Here's one of these lawyers, Ralph Hall, professor of practice at the University of Minnesota.
When you talk about expiration dates for food, they really serve a couple of functions. The one primary function is to preserve the value of the product for the consumer. Over time, products will become less flavorful or otherwise deteriorate, and the manufacturer wants the customer to have a good experience. They don't want them to have stale cookies or something like that. So often, the use before date is for taste, flavor, color, etc., not for safety reasons.
So dumpster diving may not be as dangerous as you'd think it would be, but it's still illegal. At one point, we jumped a fence to get to a dumpster that had a sign bluntly telling us to stay away.
Team members and authorized delivery personnel only beyond this point.
Most people wouldn't need a sign to tell them to stay away from trash. The stigma is so strong that it's like we have a phobia.
It really is the same things you'll find in a grocery store. I mean, they're not in the trash. They're not on the shelf anymore. They're in the trash, and people have class issues and all that's associated with profit.
That's Sammy's main reason for dumpster diving. She could afford to buy groceries, but chooses not to.
It's profitable to keep people from reusing what they're throwing away. It's literally profitable for the entire system of commerce, you know? The less that you allow people to have for free, the more that you force people to pay for.
Maggie's reasons are simpler. As a cook, she loves food too much to ever see it called trash.
No, I just love cooking. It's my number one hobby, so I'm able to jazz stuff up and make it look, I don't know, brand new again. They never would know it was trash. And then you can wow them halfway and be like, what you're eating came from the slime of the sewer. Always blows their mind.
Oh, I love trash.
Anything for Culture Q, I'm Amy Friedman.
Or dusty. Anything ragged or rotten or rusty.
This is Jackie Renzetti on Real College Podcast. Up next, we have Word on the Street, giving you a taste of the events that you need to be at this week. Starting us off, we've got Morrissey playing at the Fitzgerald on Monday, July 13th. Here's a track from his 2014 album, World Peace is None of Your Business. This one's called Earth is the Loneliest Planet.
Earth is the loneliest planet of all. Earth is the loneliest planet of all. Day after day you say one day, one day. Day after day you say one day, one day. But you're in the wrong place and you've got the wrong face. And humans are not really very humane. And Earth is the Lord.
happiest planet of all.
Then on Tuesday, July 14th, we have Dawes the Caboose. The California-based four-piece band will also be playing with Lake Street Dive and The Lone Bellow. They just released their latest album, All Your Favorite Bands, on June 2nd. And from that album, here's their single, Things Happen.
I could go on talking, or I could stop. Ring out each memory till I get every drop. Sift through the details of the others involved. The true crime would be thinking it's just one person's fault.
On Friday and Saturday, on the 17th and 18th, there will be the Roots Rock Deep Blues Festival. This will be all along Minnehaha Avenue, and there will be artists from across the country and also local bands like The Last Revel and The Fury Things, who recently did an in-studio with us, recorded live in Studio K. Here's Fury Things with their song, Whatever. Also on Friday and Saturday, we have Sean Anonymous and Dimitri Killstorm playing First Avenue. Sean is releasing his LP Better Days on Tuesday, and a recent track he did with Lizzo and POS is Big Bangs. Let's listen to that one.
This kind of music can be destructive.
If you are ready for the Big Bang, we will be waiting. When you are ready, then let's maintain the pace. And if they can't hang, but the way we make them shake it, we'll make it on our own. With the Big Bang, with a big game, with a big joke, with a big change, with a big go. Bang, bang, with the beats at the Phoenix that is creeping through the smoke. With amazing grace in their faces, though faces don't want you to make change. The way we do is shoot is a little different, I know. I thought about it a couple times, but I'm gonna make haste. The clock is ticking, the seconds overlapping. Grow with a kid, over to live, open a bit, sober to kid, over rapping. Train. When I'm leaving this evening, I'm creeping through the night. Some cats wanna be big dogs, but I'm not a great dane. So I do my thing, hopefully people be like, okay, with a big change, with a long rope and running since the 8th grade. Grace in the stages, making it, searching for the lights. Alright, with a big bang, with a big game, with a bit slow in and they...
Then on Saturday the 18th, we have the Charlie Parr Trio playing at the Turf Club. He'll also be playing with Michael Gunther. And Charlie Parr just released his 13th album called Stump Jumper this past spring. Here's the title track off of that album.
Well, weekend's almost here. I can feel it from Thursday. All my friends are getting wound up. Getting up some money, getting us a bottle, and getting my Bronco gassed up.
That's it for Word on the Street. I'm Jackie Renzetti, and you're listening to Real College Podcast.
When I work when I can, and I ain't got no money, and I may look rough, but I'm an honest man.
Hello, you listen to Radio K's Real College Podcast. My name is Matthew Kudas, and we're back over to the studio with Aaron Bolton and Max Fuller, producers of the show, talking about resourcefulness.
I think with us, you know, being college students, I think we definitely have a different interpretation of resourcefulness. You know, we don't have the income that would suffice a family, and we don't have, like, a lot of these things. So, you know, all of our experiences were very different based on, you know, how much money we're taking out in loans, how much money we're getting from our parents, how many jobs we're working, how many hours we're doing. And I think it's so interesting to see how everyone deals with these things, but managed to find some kind of common ground. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you know, a couple of my friends have got full rides and they're doing just fine. And a couple of my friends are taking $40,000 out in loans. Some of my friends are working 3 jobs. And I think all of them, you know, kind of have a mutual understanding of what it is to appreciate what you have, you know, whether it be a full ride or whether it be,
you know, time to work three jobs to try and get yourself through college. And I think the dedication to education is impressive, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I was even talking to someone recently who does have one of those people, lucky people that gets the full ride. But they also have like this mutual understanding, like you're saying, of the people that don't or, you know, have to really work hard. And, you know, and there's some people out there that are doing some crazy things to put themselves through school and are just that dedicated to do it. But it also got to give respect for the people that do have those full rides that are making the most of it, you know, and they're putting in the work. And so they actually know work ethic and are getting stuff done, which is something you got to kind of respect too, because that's kind of, if you think about it, it might be hard in its own right of like being able to not do anything, but choosing to really work hard for something, you know, and just having that, like I said, like they have the choice, but they're choosing not to take the easy route.
We'll now hear a story from past producer Parker Lemke checking out the University Resource Center to speak to the people who are making use of the U of M's discarded test tubes, typewriters, and pretty much anything else you can think of that would be thrown away and replaced.
Chris Lentz is an administrative specialist with the department in charge of the university's day-to-day operations. He works at the 61,000-square-foot reuse warehouse, a U-affiliated storeroom filled with various recyclable items discarded by university departments and students. Reuse coordinator Chris Horizo knows it's 10 to 15 aisles of office chairs, desks, and TVs well. For him, even the most antiquated relic can be repurposed in the right hands.
We try to find a home for it somewhere on campus in another university department, and if that doesn't work, then we make it available to the general public for sale.
The Reuse Warehouse's mission to get used goods off university neighborhood curbs and out of trash bins and into the hands of new owners has been a continuing success. According to Chris Lentz, in one fiscal year, the warehouse moved a total of 115 tons of mismatched property.
Well, the three most common items we handle are office chairs, file cabinets, and desks in that order. But we take all sorts of different things. Anything that somebody could find a use for, we take.
Culture Q reporter Eric Dowski saw this firsthand when he toured the warehouse.
And we've got more office chairs on the right, a lot more office chairs, and an old Dell computer, some Orange Street cones, a very old vacuum cleaner, some mini fridges, and there's one with the Radio K sticker. Like, if I said a few nouns, chances are it would be in this warehouse somewhere.
These nouns include antique film projectors, cordless exercise machines, and dismantled microscopes. They've been gathered from almost every building on campus, even those that no longer exist except for what the reuse program has salvaged from them.
Some of these doors are actually really nice antique examples that came out of the buildings that were torn down to build the stadium, the U-Press building, the Holman building. So there's some really nice old oak and walnut doors here. Some of them need painting and door fixtures, but they'd look good in an older home.
Are these the old music education building doors? Because that's my hypothesis. Am I right or am I wrong?
I think you're correct for these two.
Okay.
Yeah, those feel like the lead-lined doors out of music.
I just touched them. I touched a piece of history.
Many other items in the warehouse date from so far back, it's hard to imagine finding a practical use for them in this day and age. Like a typewriter Eric asked Horizo about.
It's definitely pre-1960. We could go back even as far as 1940. Clearly not an electric typewriter, and they kind of took over the market in the late 50s. It is functional, so if there's anybody out there that's interested in an antique typewriter, come on in.
In a sense, Lentz and Horizo are learning history while on the job. They need a working knowledge of obscure university artifacts in order to keep track of the program's diverse inventory.
We're dealing with the lab equipment and things that come from different scientific or engineering programs, and almost everything here requires a little bit of research for a guy like me who's a liberal arts person.
And there's some more just large electronic equipment, and it's just, I have no idea what it does, and it says it's $20 and it has stuff like low water alarm and time remaining, and oh, it's plainly a microprocessor shaker bath. How did I not notice that before?
As Lentz demonstrated, some items in the warehouse are still marked by their past lives in university classrooms.
This display cabinet that we have actually comes with
test results from a orbital mechanics test. So if you missed what your grade was, it'd be a good place to look.
Even if the reused warehouse doesn't contain the kind of historic treasures you'd find in National Museums or Indiana Jones flicks, you can bet that every item that passes through its doors tells us something about the University of Minnesota's history, even if some parks are more memorable than others.
Dustbusters. Remember Dustbusters? Everybody does.
For Culture Q and all you Dustbuster fans out there, I am Parker Lemke.
All right, it is time for the weekly release spotlight with my main man, Zach Simon. How you doing, man?
Pretty well. How are you, Matt?
Oh, I'm just lovely. And what is the album this week?
Well, this week we've been listening to Deluxe. Their new album, Generations, came out in June, and it is, well, to use a term I know that you really like, a banger.
Oh.
It's just a banger.
Lovely. And where are they from? What are they doing? Why are they doing it? Etc.
Well, it's just a duo comprising of Sean Guerin and Isaac Franco. They're from Los Angeles, California, and they make some really, really dancey kind of post-punk, post-disco electronic music, very, very reminiscent of like the Talking Heads. David Byrne vocals are very, very present in the whole thing, but they actually started off making music in high school in two separate bands, and then eventually just kind of like found each other. They went to the same high school, obviously, and made the song Better at Making Time, which was one of the really, really popular singles off of their first album, Voyage. And after that, they kind of just would like tooling around with it, and they really just kind of liked working with each other. So they started making music together and eventually released their five-song EP. Well, I mean, overall, they actually just released this album like 2 months or a year and 2 months after their previous release, like their very first album. So they're still very new to the scene, but they kind of just are going about it as if they're old pros. Like the style of their music, it's just very it's very impressive. Like they have a very simple, very danceable style.
Have they changed their style since the first release, or have they just kind of like more honed it, refined it?
I'd say so. I think in their first release, it was a lot more electronic and a lot more production-based, whereas in this one, like you like the first thing you will hear on any album, or on any song, excuse me, on the album, is just the overpowering like vocals of Isaac Franco. He just sounds exactly like David Byrne. It's amazing.
What song should we play?
Well, let's see. I think probably the best one to get started, get an introduction to this album, would be Simba, Simba, Simba. It's just, I believe it's track 5. It's just a very, very nice kind of overview of their whole sound. It has a lot of really great elements from, like, the vocals and their very, like, synth-heavy style, so.
Right, to play us out, here is Deluxe with Simba, Simba, Simba from the record Generation and our weekly release spotlight. Thanks to Aaron Bolton, Max Fuller, Jackie Renzetti, and Zach Simon for contributing to this week's Real College podcast. You can find us on RadioK.org, PRX, iTunes, and on air Sundays at 6 p.m. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund, and thank you for listening.
Some people ask me, don't you want to experience what I am? They say, but you don't really know.